And let me just offer to you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. I love almost everything about Christmas, the entire Christmas season, from the moment we get on the other side of Thanksgiving until January 6th, Epiphany. I just love just about everything about it, maybe minus some of the secular, you know, the materialistic shopping and things like that. But I even love being out in the crowds in most years. And so there's just so much about the holiday season that I think is good and that I want to carry through with me the rest of the year, well beyond January 6th. But the funny thing is that I'll often say Merry Christmas to people well past Christmas, and they will either look at me and give me kind of a funny response, or they'll outright correct me and they'll say, this is January 2nd. I think Christmas is past. And then I have to say to them, no, not until Epiphany. January 6th, the Magi arrive on January 6th and Joseph takes his family on the run, and then Christmas is over. In the meantime, Merry Christmas. So I love that. I love sharing that with people. So I hope that it helps them to kind of spread the season out a little bit too when we have that opportunity for that exchange. And I just wanted to talk about that a little bit this morning, and how can we hold on to the holidays and make them last just a little bit longer than December 26th. So one of the things that I find frustrating about the secular celebration of Christmas is that there's this abrupt end on December 26th. December 26th arrives and boom, it all stops. I have sometimes, even turned the radio station over still wanting to hear just a little bit more Christmas music on the 26th, and the channels have all gone back to regular programming. And I was disappointed a few years ago. I did that even on our local Christian channel that I listened to from time to time, and even they switched back on the 26th to their regular programming and didn't play continuous carols through the 6th. So that's just one of those things that I am disappointed in with the secular celebration, is that it just abruptly ends. And as a young mother, I would always try to find ways to extend the Christmas holiday and to kind of live out our faith and teach the kids that it wasn't over on the 26th, that we continue to celebrate all the way to Epiphany on the 6th. So some of the things that we've tried have worked and they've stuck, and other things have not worked and they've kind of gone by their wayside, or maybe they stuck with this for a little while and then moved on. But one tradition that we definitely gave the boot to was New Year's resolutions. Now, you might think, well, New Year's resolutions aren't really a religious observance anyway, so that would be okay to lose those. But actually, there's several connections, religious connections, that New Year's resolutions have to, our faith. And so one of those is, and this is a pagan connection, so it may not really apply to us, but pagans, especially Romans, would pray to their gods at the beginning of the year and make promises for the upcoming year. In addition to that, knights during the Middle Ages who committed themselves to chivalry would recommit themselves, or they would renew their, they called it a peacock vow, and they would renew that commitment to chivalry each year at the beginning of the year. Then there are the observances of the Jewish traditions of Yom Kippur. And Yom Kippur is the end of the high holidays called Rosh Hashanah for the Jewish people. And during that time, they fast and they confess their sins and they repent. So again, there's that connection in the Jewish faith to what we now know as New Year's resolutions. And then in the Western Church, both in the Catholic and Protestant traditions, many congregations participate in what's called a night watch service, or some people might know it as a covenant renewal service. And these are usually held on New Year's Eve or New Year's Day, and the service is generally about taking a look back at the year that is ending and making any necessary confessions or changes, and then looking forward and talking and praying and making resolutions about how to prepare for that new year. So there's actually quite a few connections to the New Year's tradition of resolutions to our faith. So why did we choose to give this the boot? Well, as you probably already know, that by Martin Luther King Day, many of us who have chosen to make resolutions have long forgotten those resolutions by Martin Luther King Day. They go out the window, and they are no longer things that we're even thinking about by the time we get 2 weeks into the year. So I wondered why that was, and I took a look around on the internet, on some social media places, and I wanted to know what was it that caused people to not stick with their vows, with their resolutions. Why were they letting them go? So I looked at what their resolutions were. So the five that I found, or I actually found many, but the five that I liked the best, I guess, that I thought were the funniest were, the first one was that the resolution was to watch every episode of Power Rangers. The second one was to try new things, including absinthe. The third one was to get their photo taken in 5 interesting places. The fourth one was to learn a cool new party trick. And the fifth one was to live their best life and only buy pants with no buttons or zippers. So I thought immediately, well, those aren't very meaningful kinds of resolutions. So I took a look at what the reasons were that people failed. And what I found was that people often fail because there's no accountability, because they expect immediate gratification, and when they don't get that immediate gratification, they give up. There's no good plan in place to make the resolution happen, and maybe most importantly to me, or most significant to me, is that while they have an idea of what they want, they have no idea of why they want that. So in other words, what they want is not connected to something meaningful for them. There is no real reason to actually get what they want. One tradition that we do keep here in our house at Christmas time is to watch Christmas movies. And we watch as many as we possibly can. We start on Thanksgiving with White Christmas, and we throw in The Grinch as often as we can. It's A Wonderful Life, Holiday Inn, many of the claymation favorites like It's a Year Without a Santa, or Santa Claus is Coming to Town, or Little Drummer Boy. We get in as many of those as we possibly can. We can't forget The Nutcracker, and we try to see that in the live version if we possibly can. We watch The Polar Express. We throw in a couple of Hallmark movies here and there, and the Santa Claus with Tim Allen is a favorite. Charlie Brown is a favorite. And at Christmas Eve, we kind of save this one for Christmas Eve. We try to watch The Nativity. So then there are a few new ones like Arthur Christmas, Elf, and Prep and Landing. A couple of those are animated ones that have become some of my favorites. And we just think they're funny and humorous, and so we get those in us along the way as much as we can as well. But you get the picture. We get a lot of Christmas movies in at Christmas, and we can't always get them all in before Christmas, so we spend a good bit of the time that's kind of downtime between the holidays watching movies. But our very, very favorite one is A Christmas Carol, and we watch as many versions as we can. We watched our favorites are Patrick Stewart and Jim Carrey, and we also enjoy some of the older versions, but we even like the Mickey Mouse version of it. We'll even watch that if we find it on TV. So those are the ways we spend our Christmas holiday. And why do we like the Christmas Carol? So that's kind of a funny question. Some people ask that. Why do you like that one so much? Something magical happens. something happens in that story when there's this grumpy old curmudgeon, and he gets redeemed, and he learns to keep Christmas in his heart all throughout the year. And it's just something about the story that just kind of melts me and Bill as well. And we think of it as our favorite, and we just love, for me personally, I love any story all year long where people, just regular everyday people like you and I, live out their faith or learn to live out their faith in really subtle ways, and they learn to deal with their pain and their struggle along the way, and they end up giving their best, living their best life every day in simple ways that express grace and forgiveness and kindness and generosity, and they simply become the people God always intended them to be. And I just love that in any story at any time of the year. But in the very beginning of A Christmas Carol, Dickens describes Scrooge in this way. He says he's a squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner. Then he later goes on and describes him as someone who has no warmth could warm him, no wintry chill could chill him. No wind that blew was bitterer than he. He is not a very nice person, and he is everything we don't like about the world around us, about other people, and about even ourselves. Yet, his full name is Ebenezer Scrooge, and Ebenezer is the Hebrew word for stone of help. So you may recall that not too long ago, Lori invited us to sing a hymn called Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing. And in that song, there is a line that says, here I raise my Ebenezer, hither by thy help I've come. Some hymnals change the words and translate it to the following. Here I find my great treasure, hither by thy help I've come. So already we receive this clue that there is always something more intended for Scrooge than what he has become in the story at the beginning. So we get another clue kind of early on, too, that there's something more here going on. And that clue happens when we meet Marley the ghost. And he asks Scrooge the following. Why did I not walk through crowds of fellow beings with my eyes turned down? I'm sorry, why did I walk through crowds of fellow beings with my eyes turned down and never raise them to that blessed star which led the wise man to a poor abode? Were there no poor homes to which its light would have conducted me? In other words, Marley's saying, why did I not see when I was alive and could do something about it that the world is full of people in need? Then Marley shows Scrooge, out the window, the spirits that fill the streets of London. These spirits walk the streets, witnessing the needs of others, but have no ability to do anything about it. Mark Rawls, who's an author of a Bible study called The Redemption of Scrooge, writes, it's as though they are full of love and unable to share it. They can never satisfy their hunger to love their neighbors as themselves. Rawls goes on to describe hell as a place where one can have too much and not enough all at the same time. If in hell we receive all of our desires, all of the things we want, can you imagine the quarreling and eventually the isolation that might lead to? We would all become Scrooge, in hell or worse. And this transformation into a lesser version of ourselves is already easy to make. It's as simple as taking the turn on the road we are traveling, taking the wrong turn on the road we are traveling. Remember how the Hebrew people wanted more as they wandered the desert just after being released from slavery by God? They were being led through wilderness by Moses toward the promised land. They had everything they needed. God provided all they could want, or I'm sorry, all they could need, and all they had to do was to trust God. but it was so easy to be swayed by their wants. They ended up wanting to return to Egypt and return to the bonds of slavery. They were free after generations of slavery. What joy to receive such a gift after waiting so long, but they could not connect to that joy. Well, Scrooge also cannot connect to the joy that surrounds him. He cannot give balance to the sadness and the joy that he has known. And like many of us at times in our lives, he focuses on the sadness only, and he is overcome by it. It consumes him completely. But we also get to witness the changing within Scrooge. As he watches and remembers a scene from his childhood unfold before him with the ghost of Christmas past, we see him left out of the fun and games his friends and other boys his age are enjoying. If we watch closely, and if the actor is good, we will see that the ghost of what the ghost of Christmas sees. The briefest change in his expression as he remembers. When he asks Scrooge about it, Scrooge replies, "Oh, it's nothing. There was a boy singing a Christmas carol at my door last night. I should have given him something, that's all." The change is not yet complete, but it has begun. Today, in just a bit, we will share communion together, and Jesus invites us to this meal in remembrance of him. Jesus knows all of our faults. Every last one. And still, he loves us and invites us to connect to him. Being connected to Christ or being saved does not mean we have achieved perfection or that we are no longer able to do wrong. It does mean that we can know, we can trust, we can believe beyond a doubt that we are redeemed, made worthy in Christ. We can do nothing to warrant being saved, nothing to justify ourselves. The only thing we are asked to do is to accept the gift. And by accepting it, we are transformed by it. And in the transformation, we must share it. We must share God's love with others, the love we have come to know. God does not ask us to be perfect. Instead, God asks us to take the time to discover the perfectly suited gift he has placed within each of us that we are to use to respond to God's grace. This is not easy for Scrooge, nor is it easy for us. But in the end, Scrooge does this well. So well, in fact, he keeps Christmas in his heart all year long. This is my kind of guy. He has learned to extend the holidays to 365 days a year. After he spends time with his ghostly trio, he realizes he does not look much like the person he was created to become. He once was on the road to becoming that person, but he has taken a very bad turn along the way. And he awakens the next morning, and his heart is changed. He has been transformed. He becomes more compassionate, more kind, more generous, more giving, and even more fun-loving. He immediately puts the gifts God has given him to work, responding to God's grace, and he keeps Christmas in his heart throughout the year. He transforms into Ebenezer. I want to be Ebenezer. I want to keep Christmas in my heart throughout the year. And so that brings me back to resolutions. I say the Dickens with resolutions. I look instead for the gifts God has given me and how can I share them. I try to give consideration to Marley's laments and open my eyes to see what is right in front of me each and every day. What do I need to let go of to make these happen? What do I need to keep doing or begin to do to make them happen? I want to be like Ebenezer. I want to see the little boy singing on my doorstep and offer him something. That's all. When I do that, when I see the people around me and I offer them something that reflects God's love for them, when I hear them, when I walk with them, when I companion them, when I become their friend, Then I know I'm on the path God laid out for me. Then I begin to fully become who God created me to be. I think this is what Ebenezer spent the rest of his life doing and how he kept Christmas in his heart all throughout the year. Let's turn our attention to communion, and I did forget to remind you at the beginning of the service to gather up bread and communion wine so that you could participate in communion here this morning. So I'm going to give you just a moment or two to get that gathered up.